I'm a big believer in knowing who we are well enough that we understand the extra income that's there, the extra resources that we have. But when I talk about knowing ourselves well enough, I'm really talking about knowing what we want to deliver into the world. And if we've got plenty of resources to deliver who we want to be into the world, and we've got excess resources, this is a great year for giving to both the needy and to cultural organizations and shoring up democracy. This is a great time to give in general because of the struggles that so many people have been going through.
That's George Kinder, president of the Kinder Institute of Life Planning. And he's talking all about charitable giving and why it's particularly important this year. That's in our big interview. But if you're looking for market talk, we've got that too.
The underpinning amount of money that's still out there uninvested in the markets is so overwhelming that it really overwhelms about everything else, making this that most beloved of markets, the buy every pullback type of market.
That's technical analyst D.R. Barton Jr., editor of Straight Up Profits, who is extremely bullish on the market right now. We've also got Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Asset Management talking ETFs in the market call, and Ramana King from Zolo talking their study of just how overconfident people are about money. This is Money Life for December the 1st. Good morning. Welcome to the show. I am Chuck Jaffe, your host, and yep, it's time to live the money life. And we do have a great show planned for you today. Our big interview with George Kinder, well, I can tell you I'm writing a column on that subject. It is going to be going out to subscribers tonight. If you don't get my column, but you'd like to have it sent to you, send me an email, chuck@moneylifeshow.com. I wanted to talk to George for the column, and then while I was talking, I'm like, why are we not having him on the show? Because George wrote one of the greatest books about money and managing money in history, that called The Seven Stages of Money Maturity. And I know, without actually even having discussed much of this, other than to say that George was coming on the show, that a number of you are concerned because I've gotten some nice notes where you're asking questions about charitable giving and more. And I think it's really important this year to recognize that we are, perhaps in many of our cases, better off than we expected to be. When I consider myself, well, my losses to the pandemic, things like income that I expected to get that was wiped out from the pandemic, and I do have some. Well, that was unfortunate. But as I get to the end of the year, courtesy of the stock market and solid investments and whatever else, I'm actually in better financial shape at the end of the year than I was at the beginning of the year, in a year that's notoriously terrible. With that, even though it's not like, wow, I'm sitting on Easy Street or anything else, I feel it's incumbent upon people, perhaps this year more than most, to find a way to be generous. I think the pandemic has proven to us that we can all live with less stuff. So maybe that's the right way to do things. So that's the subject of my column. It's also a lot of my discussion with George Kinder. But D.R. Barton is here. He's excited about the market. His energy and my energy together, that's a lot of energy. But we had a good time always chatting about the market, and we certainly did on this occasion. Ramana King is here. The Zolo study, really interesting. And then Mark Yusko in for the market call. So it's going to be a great show. And it's the 1st of December, which, well, for most of my life, I really noted as the day that my father was born. It was my father's birthday. My dad would have been 96 today, as he was born on December the 1st in 1924. He has been gone since 2012. So the day is not bittersweet or any of those other sorts of things. My dad wasn't like, hey, let's have big birthday celebrations kind of a guy. It's just, they never stop being an influence on you, at least when you've had them in your life, as long as I was lucky enough to have my dad around for. So I miss him, but all you can do is find another reason to celebrate. And that's what I'll do privately on December the 1st. I won't spend any more time about that with you, but the start of the last month of the year. Well, it's exciting from the standpoint of we've got great guests coming on the show, but it's also, I think, exciting because aren't we all waiting for 2020 to be over? I know I am. And although I'm not a superstitious person or any of those sorts of things, I just kind of think, let's turn the page and maybe we can get a little bit more energy and excitement, and that would be good for all of us. But I also kind of like what's shaping up. I mean, I don't know about you. I know certainly I'm not alone in, you know, having cleaned my garage and done a bunch of work and what have you around the house and things along those lines. But I kind of feel like I'm going into the new year with a lot of things that needed to get done, done. Now, I haven't gotten everything done. I mean, I still have papers to go through and things to sort and all this other sort of stuff. But functionally, I've done a good job of getting rid of a lot of stuff that needed to get rid of, going through a lot of stuff that had to be gone through, stuff that I haven't gone through, but that kind of needed to be kept has been at least put away properly. And the result is that I kind of feel like I'm going to get through the rest of the year doing more of that and get to where I enter 2021, not necessarily in a more zen-like state. I'm not that guy, and not really in a, wow, the whole feng shui thing is working for me, but just kind of a sense of everything's in its place and there's not a lot of extra stuff. There's not a lot of interference. And I always say I'm looking for peace in my life. I want things to be calm and easy. I want to be able to find what I need and use what I've got and all those sorts of things. And I actually think I'm setting up well for that. There's still some work to go, but hey, we can do that in the last month of the year. Follow us on Twitter. We're at Money Life Show. I'm at Chuck Jaffe. It's a great way to know that the show is up because basically there's a tweet automatically every day when we post the show. And then we do one or two other tweets beyond that. I told you about my column. I, of course, have one to write today. You can get it sent directly to you, chuck@moneylifeshow.com. You should be able to find it on our website, but that, of course, assumes that I actually get it up on our website, which I don't always do. Because, well, I guess, whatever.
Come on, Buckethead!
Yeah. If you really wanted to be there and you told me about that, maybe I would be better at getting it up there. So tell me, chuck@moneylifeshow.com. But right now, settle back and relax, because again, we got a fun show to get to. I've told you what's coming. Let's get to it. D.R. Barton is up first when we come back right after this message.
And away we go.
If you like Money Life, you appreciate having complete command of your finances and your retirement plan. At RetirementDaily.net, you'll find the information you need to help you plan for and live in retirement. So check out RetirementDaily.net, run by editor Bob Powell, your first and best stop in your search for all things retirement.
We start today's show talking technical analysis, and I'm doing that with D.R. Barton Jr. He is the editor of Straight Up Profits, the chief technical strategist at Money Map Press. So if you want to learn more, well, straightupprofits.com, just like it sounds. He also runs the Dark Edge Project. That's darkedgeproject.com. And if you want to learn more about him, what he's thinking, what he's doing, then follow him on Twitter. He's at D.R. Barton Jr., D.R. Barton Jr. D.R. Barton, great to have you back on Money Life.
Always a pleasure and a treat, Chuck.
Well, I love getting a chance to chat with you. And one of the things that we have to sort of sift through in this market is we've had the big exogenous events that, while they're not things that necessarily show up as technical that you can point to and go, oh, this is what happened that created that, they've been influencing things. But now the election is passed, and now we at least look like we've got a vaccine on the horizon. So are we at a point where you're expecting normal holidays in an abnormal year, like Santa Claus coming to town, January effect, those kinds of things? Or is there something else you're seeing right now?
No, I think a couple of the things that you're looking at, and you just mentioned those seasonal tendencies, I am definitely thinking we might see even stronger than normal. You know, we've seen some numbers already coming out from the Black Friday weekend that were really good for online, not so great for bricks and mortar, but retail has been so strong. And I think the trend of buying experiences as gifts as opposed to buying stuff is going to reverse quite a bit this year, that it's tougher to give somebody a trip. It's tougher to give somebody ball tickets or tickets to a show. So I think that we are going to see a really strong retail season. And I believe you mentioned the January effect, the fact that small caps outperform large caps in January. That happened up until about 1987, very pronouncedly. Since 87, that has really fallen back, Chuck, to the last 2 weeks of December. And I am long a bunch of Russell right now and a Russell 2000 index. And I think that is one great place that people can be right now.
That being the case, we have a market that has now broken through on the Dow 30,000. And I know that the Dow is not anybody's serious indicator and hasn't been for years. In fact, I've been writing that I'd love to get rid of it as a significant benchmark, but it's kind of like killing off the Kardashians. You know, it's a celebrity index, really tough to do that. But the Dow has been kind of fighting to get to 30,000. The S&P has been fighting to try to get to new highs and has been bouncing off of resistance. Are we going to see a setback before we can get higher?
You know, it's always possible after the strong November we have, the second strongest November, I believe, in history. I know since 1928 we had the only one I could find that was stronger. So after such a big run-up, a little pullback, a little profit-taking would not be unusual, and we might be seeing a little bit of that early this week, so that's okay. And yes, a little bit more would actually give us some better buying opportunities, but you know me, Chuck, I'm a big technical guy. I love to watch the numbers. I love to watch the charts, but the underpinning amount of money that's still out there uninvested in the markets is so overwhelming that it really overwhelms about everything else, making this that most beloved of markets, the buy every pullback type of market. And that's just the mode that I've been in and the mode that I'm going to stay in.
That being the case, how high do we go, or how long does this go? Because we have a market that has a ton of money that's looking to get to work. And that's not going to change even when some of that money gets to work. It's going to be a long time before all that money gets to work. So is that just going to negate or remove most of the downside pressure?
I think it will overwhelm downside pressure. Can we get short-term problems with fill in the blank, with more coronavirus cases, worst hospitalization rates? Can those things happen? Maybe even vaccine production gets pushed back a month or two. Could we have negative news like that? Negative news out of China relations. All of those things can happen, and every one of those pullbacks, because of the trillions, and I emphasize trillion with a T, all of those trillions of dollars that are out there from monetary and fiscal stimulus are still going to rush right back in to fill that gap. So yeah, we can get pullbacks, and every time we do, I'm going to be buying hand over fist.
That is great news. Are there any industries or sectors that you particularly favor or that you're particularly avoiding as you're doing this buying?
Hit the right word, industries. I love the cyclicals. I believe we've seen a really interesting dance over the past about 3 months, where anytime we have a pullback in the mega caps, the Apple, Amazon, Google, group, and that whole Microsoft, all the biggest stocks we have, they pull back. And what happens in those week to 2 week time frames is that money rolls into the cyclicals, what we call the cyclicals, the material stocks like Freeport MacMoran, those kinds of stocks, Air Products, and then we also get rotation into industrial stocks. We're seeing some uptrends in things that, like the shippers, FedEx, UPS, that would be considered industrial, Union Pacific. Pacific, you know, big rail shippers. Those kinds of plays, I think, are going to be long-term places that have been undervalued, and some of those other undervalued areas. We've seen banks starting to rear their head again with higher production numbers. We're getting to see fundamental things like a little bit of inflation creeping back in. That's going to help that financial sector as well. So that's my favorite beatdown sector, financials, but I love continuing to play that rotation into industrials and material stocks as well.
DR, great stuff as always. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great holiday season. We'll talk to you again on the other side and look forward to seeing if this is continuing into 2021.
Well, God bless you, Chuck. Thanks for all of the time, and as always, a great segment.
That's D.R. Barton Jr., everybody. He is the editor of Straight Up Profits. StraightUpProfits.com. No dashes, no hyphens. StraightUpProfits.com, the website. Also, DarkEdgeProject.com. And he's chief technical strategist at Money Map Press. You can follow him on Twitter at D.R. Barton Jr. Okay, this was a great way for us to start our first show in December. Up next, our big interview is with George Kinder, the founder of the Kinder Life Planning Institute. Yeah, it's going to be a fun one, and it's coming up right after this message.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Welcome to the big interview on today's show. I am very pleased to be joined right now by George Kinder. Now, if that name doesn't ring a bell to you, well, you're not in the financial planning realm, and that's okay. But if it doesn't ring a bell to you, you may want to go learn about who he is and what he does, because we talk on this show occasionally about life planners and folks who are trying to make it not that you live out your financial life to what somebody else thinks, but that you say, hey, this is what I want to accomplish. And they go, let's try to get you there as soon as possible. And George Kinder, well, he's pretty much the guy who came up with that concept. He is president of the Kinder Institute of Life Planning. He is the author of a book that I refer to all the time. It is The Seven Stages of Money Maturity. And in fact, we arranged this interview in part because I wanted to talk to him about a column on that I'm working on about giving around the holidays. George is involved in a lot of different things. If you want to learn more, lifeplanningforyou.com or kinderinstitute.com or georgekinder.com and more. They're all linked up at the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. And George is on Twitter. He's at George D. Kinder. But right now he's on Money Life. George Kinder, great to have you back on the show.
Nice talk with you, Chuck.
So I want to carry on the conversation that my audience really was not privy to, because the reason that I said, hey, I need to talk to George Kinder without the show being what I was thinking of doing was simply I was working on a column that looks at the idea that for some folks, and I assume my audience is among them because they are investors, this year feels terrible. But when we look at our portfolios, it's going to wind up looking pretty great. So that being the case, how does that change the way we should act and feel and be with our money around the holidays, and especially when it comes to kind of giving thanks this holiday season?
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer in knowing who we are well enough that we understand the extra income that's there, the extra resources that we have. But when I talk about knowing ourselves well enough, I'm really talking about knowing what we want to deliver into the world. And if we've got plenty of resources to deliver who we want to be into the world, and we've got excess resources, this is a great year for giving to both the needy and to cultural organizations and shoring up democracy. This is a great time to give in general because of the struggles that so many people have been going through.
One of the things that happens, and I've talked to a number of my audience members about this, these are folks who have been successful. They've done the right things. They've been through the financial planning process, and now they're nearing retirement or they're in retirement. And one of the things they find is that it's difficult for them to spend money. not that they couldn't go out and spend it, but it's like, wait, I want to go on vacation, but I still want to take that flight that has the three different layovers and the whatever to save $40, when, of course, they're not doing a good job valuing their time. They find it hard to spend. If they're finding it hard to spend, where does giving come in? I mean, if you have the emotional thing that you're still trying to be cheap and you're still acting as if you're in the accumulation phase, once you're in the phase where you've got it and you've done it, you've achieved your life's plan, how can you explain to them that, like, hey, don't short circuit it by being cheap or stingy or whatever it is right now?
What we do is we remind people of who they really want to be. In a life planning process, half the work is on getting to know the client and giving the client a perspective on themselves where they become passionate about delivering themselves and the best of themselves into the world. And when you have that kind of passion, so we do it with, you know, we have a number of goal-oriented exercises that are profound and that really clarify what our aspirations are, both for ourselves and for the world. And when you have that kind of passion inside of you, that kind of fire inside of you, you don't hold back when it comes to spending. You aren't driven anymore by your old habits, which in this case might be a miserly kind of habit of not spending. Instead, you're driven by how you can make a difference in the world.
What that means from a life planning standpoint is, if I were to connect you to some of these folks who are in my audience who have had this discussion with, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you would be telling them, find something that you're passionate enough that I really want to support this, or I really want to make this happen, or I really want to do this, or this is important to me, that if you find those things, whatever the governor is that's holding you back from being a little more free with your money is going to go away.
Yeah, I mean, the classic way that people know my work is through something called the three questions. And it's just one of several exercises, but it's very, very precise to this, I think, Chuck. And the first question is, if you had all the money that you needed in life, what would you do with it? The second question, if you discovered you only had 5 to 10 years left to live, what would you do with your life? And then the third question, and here the progression is really important, because the third question gets deeper still, which is, if you suddenly heard, you know, here we are in COVID time, and you suddenly heard that you only have 24 hours left to live, the question's not what you would you do with that time, but what did you miss? You know, who did you not get to be? What did you not get to do? And when you address that question with it, I mean, it has obviously there's tears in that question for many people. There's a profound nature to that question. Sometimes there's some despair around that question. But when you address that question, you're both thinking about who you want to be and how you want to contribute to the world and how you want the world to be. And when you give room for that question, you discover what you're passionate about. And then you want to go from that to, all right, how am I going to do it? Let's figure out how to deliver this stuff into the world. And so if it's addressing climate change, or it's addressing democracy, or it's addressing the needy out in the world, or it's addressing the cultural institutions right now that are under tremendous threat because of the variety of things that have happened over the last 4 years, but hugely by COVID and this recession, you become passionate about delivering those things into the world.
When you consider where we are with the pandemic, you've always been a big thinker, looking at the bigger issues, trying to get people to think bigger. How big are we making the divides? I mean, we already are politically divided and everything else in this country, but yeah. How much bigger are the divides getting when you get to the economic situation we were discussing at the start of this, where some of us can look and go, hey, you know, pretty good year and everything's been pretty good in spite of whatever. And others are going to come through this going, I may never recover.
Right. Right. Well, I think we need to think much bigger. And the last book I wrote, I don't know whether you're familiar with it or not, it's called A Golden Civilization and the Map of Mindfulness. And in it, what I propose, and I think it's time now for us to be doing this, is that it's time for us to think about what would be a golden civilization, not just in America, but all over the world. What would it look like? And normally when we think about something like that, we think, well, in a couple hundred years or whatever, well, fine. Think about it in a couple hundred years. But once you've thought about it, and I'm working with audiences all over the world to do this as groups, But once you've thought about what it looks like, then come back and, hey, let's deliver it. Let's deliver it now. Let's deliver it in a single generation, just like we went to the moon. It's time. You know, so much of what we're going through, look at COVID. Look at this fear of autocracy in the world. Look at the economy and what's happening. Our problems have become global problems. It's time that we thought globally about the human species and thought, what would be a sustainable system and how can we deliver it into the world? I think we need to think much bigger than we've been thinking.
I will point out to my audience that I gave a bunch of web addresses and they are all linked up at the Money Life Show recent guest page, but there's a website as well, agoldencivilization.com, with the letter A in front of it, agoldencivilization.com, where folks can get more information about that. Almost out of time here. Given the year that we've had and everything else, as we get through the holidays, how much more, or is it more important for people to look ahead and, you know, start 2021, fresh goals, fresh resolutions, all that other sort of stuff? I mean, should the time out that we've had to take in our daily lives because of the strangeness of the pandemic situation make it that everybody, whether they're life planning or not, kind of wants to do a little bit of life planning now?
Yeah, I think so, Chuck. I think this is a great time for it. And we may not quite be there. It may be the new year where we begin to kind of almost feel springtime, because it's quite something that this is going to end very likely in springtime when we feel this surge of energy inside of us. But I think we'd need to, all of us, think about that dream, think how we want to come out of this, but also to be prepared. This is one of the reasons that giving is so important right now. Be prepared for your favorite movie theater. Maybe it's not going to be there. Your favorite restaurant, maybe not going to be there. Your favorite arts cultural organization, maybe it's not going to be there. And very important for us to think how to give so that that world that we come out to with our New Year's resolution and beginning to plan with our life plan, as much of it as possible is there.
George, great stuff as always. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me. Have a great holiday season. We'll talk to you again down the line.
Wonderful. Thanks, Chuck.
That's George Kinder. He is president of the Kinder Institute of Life Planning. He is truly a renaissance man in the financial planning world, or maybe just take out the financial, just kind of in the world. If you want to learn more, lifeplanningforyou.com, kinderinstitute.com, georgekinder.com, agoldencivilization.com. There's more. They're all linked up at the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. And oh, by the way, he's on Twitter at George D. Kinder. We just hit the halfway pole on the December 1st edition of Money Life. But halfway means we're just getting warmed up. So settle back and relax, because there's a lot more to go and you don't want to miss any of it. This is Money Life.
Hightower is a groundbreaking team of financial advisors committed to giving you access to best-in-class financial products and services, a practice often overlooked by brokers on Wall Street. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
Now we're going to look at what the survey said. Welcome to The Survey Said on Money Life. This is where we look at surveys, studies, polls, any kind of data or research that's going to help us figure out what people are doing with money, what they're thinking about money, how they're reacting to current events with money, and much, much more. And, well, today we are looking at something that talks about the way people are reacting to just about anything with their finances might not be the right way for you to be reacting. Why? Because according to a new study out from Zolo, the real estate marketplace, Americans dramatically overestimate their financial knowledge. If you want to learn more, go to zolo.ca/blog. On Twitter at Zolo Canada, my guest is Ramona King, director of content at Zolo. She's on Twitter at RK Homeowner. Ramona King, welcome to Money Life.
Great to be here.
I wish people had the appropriate amount of financial confidence and financial knowledge, but this is kind of like driving, where everybody thinks they're above average drivers. And obviously we can't all be above average drivers, right? This is a case of people thinking they have more skill when it comes to their money than they actually have. How did you suss that out from folks?
For the last 10 years, a lot of people have put a focus on financial literacy, which is a combination of things. It's knowledge, it's skills, and it's confidence. And for the last 10 years, and when I say a lot of people, governments, nonprofits, financial planners, institutions, all focused on trying to get North Americans to be better at managing money. And so we thought at the 10-year mark, because we've been doing this for 10 years now, at the 10-year mark, it would be good to try and get an idea of how confident are people, what are their skills at, and do they feel like they have that knowledge? And what we found from our survey, which was we surveyed about 6,000, just over 6,500 North Americans, and we found the confidence was really high, but our knowledge and our skill set wasn't matching our confidence, which is kind of shocking now.
How does that then play out? Because there are times when we are inappropriately too worried, right? We have everyone worrying that, oh, I'm going to run out of money if the wrong thing happens. And yet we don't necessarily have stories. I mean, the pandemic has kind of proven out that maybe people aren't quite as badly off because so many people, such a huge chunk of the population, and indeed your study showed it too, that like 3 in 4 people say, hey, lose my job, I'm out of money in a month or 2 months or 3 months. But we've now been doing the pandemic for this long and we haven't seen massive, I'm totally out of money kinds of stories. We haven't gone back to the days of people eating cat food. So is there a bit of a disconnect on both ends?
No, I think that what that shows is that state and federal governments and municipal governments, they've done a lot to try and keep the economy going to the best of their ability. And so whether it be state handout or someone picking up a job in another field, I know lots of people that were in, you know, the hand-to-mouth or paycheck-to-paycheck category, and they lost one job, but they picked it up somewhere else. So I think what it shows is resilience. Americans are very resilient. They will find a way to feed their children and pay their bill. But it doesn't take away the stress of money, and it doesn't take away the fear of running out of money because we're not able to put into action what we know. So this is the thing about financial literacy. It's a three-prong approach. It's I might know something, I might have the skills for something, and I might have the confidence, but I need all three in order to be successful. So I might know I need an emergency fund of 6 months worth of expenses, but I might not have either the skills or the means to be able to do that, and therefore I don't have the confidence.
You talked about financial literacy. Part of what you measured was financial literacy, and half of the folks you surveyed were able to pass a basic financial literacy test, which is horrible. But does that show also that all of these efforts, and they have been throughout North America for a long time now, it's not just something recent, because I've been doing this for a long time and financial literacy has been such a focus. Does it show that basically financial literacy efforts are not working?
You know what? More needs to be revealed on that. I think what it does show is that there are gaps. And I think that the gaps that, you know, just me personally looking at the data, I think the gaps that I see, it's not that we don't have the knowledge, it's that we don't always understand the knowledge that we have. And I'll give you an example. You know, a lot of people look at their monthly credit card bill and they say, oh, you know, my interest is 29% per month. And they think, well, you know, I didn't pay this monthly credit card bill. I'm going to have to pay interest, but it's, you know, on the month. No, that interest accrues daily. And when we went out and we asked that question, hey, do you have that knowledge? Not everyone, I think it was 60-odd% were able to say, yes, I understand that it accrues daily. The rest didn't understand that. And that's the difference between the knowledge and the skill set and the confidence. And so now I think we're getting into the weeds, but the weeds are what's important. It's the details that are important when it comes to finances. What we can say is that because 54% did pass the financial literacy test and we don't have a national financial literacy program, I think we're doing better than we realize, but we can definitely do better still.
Doing better than we realize, even if we're educating them. I mean, there were some alarming numbers in this study from Zolo. More than half of North Americans were behind a bit in paying their bills. And that's like 2 or more months of behind in paying bills. And nearly half were behind in paying their rent and their mortgage. How much of that was exacerbated by the pandemic since you've done this study for a while? Or have those numbers held steady, even though we're now in a mode where you'd think that has gone up dramatically?
In this circumstance, and I think this is the year that it was really good to examine this, in this circumstance, the pandemic did actually really exacerbate that. I think people really did have to put certain must-do bill payments, like I will always pay this bill, that went on the back burner. I do know that there were large numbers of people that did take mortgage deferrals, that did ask for credit card deferral payments, just so that they can stretch their money a little bit further. Not because necessarily they were going to run out of money, but they were worried they were because they didn't have that emergency fund. So to me, that shows, and this is the problem with financial literacy, it's not a simple skill or task or knowledge base in order to test. It's very multi-layered, multifaceted, but it shows that there is a lot more knowledge out there. People were able to understand, hey, I need to stretch my dollar in this time of uncertainty where I don't know whether or not I'll have a paycheck a month from now. And so I need to take advantage of being able to defer those bills. So I'm not going to pay a bill for 2 months, and I'm going to ask for leniency from my credit card. So definitely the times and the circumstances exacerbated that. What does worry us is that we have more confidence in our skills and less knowledge on the fine-tuning of those skills, on knowing when mortgage interest is due, on knowing what a term versus an amortization is. You know, if I go to a bank and I get a 15-year mortgage, do I really understand how that's calculated when it comes to my mortgage interest rate or the annual percentage rate? These are the things that we need to understand as consumers so that we can better manage our money.
Yeah, and that's, of course, what we're trying to teach them here at Money Life. It's what you're trying to teach them at Zolo. Thanks so much for joining me to discuss it.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
That's Ramana King. She is personal finance expert and director of content at Zolo. Zolo is a real estate marketplace blog, and there's a lot of educational materials there. It's zolo.ca. They're on Twitter at Zolo Canada. Ramana's on Twitter at RK Homeowner. Money Life will be right back. Stick around. You don't want to miss it.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
Mark Yusko, Chief Investment Officer at Morgan Creek Asset Management, is here, and we're talking mutual funds and ETFs now in the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that informs their buys and sells, what they see happening broadly now, and how they put it all together. We find out what they like and dislike. We also find out how they feel about some investments you're particularly interested in, and we have a lot of fun along the way. My guest is Mark Yusko. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Morgan Creek Asset Management. Online at morgancreekcap.com. Mark's on Twitter. He's at Mark Yusko, which is Y-U-S-K-O. He's on Twitter at Mark Yusko, and he's worth following. But right now, he's worth listening to, so let's bring him in. Mark Yusko, great to have you back on Money Life.
Chuck, thanks for having me. Great intro. I love it.
We always start with methodology, and you've got a very specific one and an interesting one because it's not everybody's methodology. So explain how it works.
Yeah, so we follow what's called the endowment model of investing. And you know, sometimes I think it's a misnomer because it's not like endowments are the only ones that use it. It's really every large pool of capital in the world, whether it's a pension fund or a sovereign wealth fund or even some big individuals. And it just starts with a very broad, diversified approach. So we have a value bias, but we invest across all asset classes, from stocks to bonds to currencies to commodities. We utilize as many investment strategies as we can in order to implement that. So we look for the most talented managers across all of those asset classes and look for people who may use a hedged strategy in the equity markets or sometimes a long-only strategy. We look at a lot of private markets like venture capital and growth equity and buyouts and real estate commodities. And then, you know, lately we've been spending a lot of time in the digital asset space where, you know, one of the hallmarks of endowment model investing is this focus on innovation. And my pinned tweet on Twitter is, you know, you make the most money or the greatest wealth is created when you invest in something that you believe in before others even understand. And when you think about the great innovations of our age, you know, the last 50, 60 years have been dominated by information technology and computing power. And that transition to the digital age, as we're seeing accelerated here with the COVID and the lockdowns, I think is one of the biggest and most exciting opportunities out there.
So when you're talking about those opportunities, is it that you're looking at tilting the portfolio a little bit, or is it making a larger shift than that? I mean, is it, okay, I see this opportunity, I'm angling towards it, or I'm moving wholesale towards it?
Ah, great question. So look, everything that we do is incremental, in the sense that, you know, we start with a strategic investment policy, and within that policy, we're going to have targets and ranges for things like traditional investments, stocks and bonds, but then also, you know, those innovation investments related to things like venture capital or growth capital, where you're helping private businesses excel. And then you've got the public market innovations, where you're looking at it from a technology standpoint. In fact, I heard a great line the other day from an interesting CEO who said, you know, to say that technology is a single sector is really a misnomer. Says all great companies of time have been technology companies. You know, imagine the big oil companies when they said they were going to extract oil from shale rock. That was technology, right? Plain and simple. So, you know, he said when financial advisors call and say, oh, your tech weighting's too high, he says, that's crazy. My tech weighting should be, you know, 100%, because everything that we look at is really an application of technology to make lives better. So I thought that was an interesting perspective. But, mm-hmm. you know, when we think about the current opportunities, particularly in respect to digital assets, we're thinking about infrastructure. So there's incremental investments in the infrastructure that's going to lay the groundwork for adopting these digital assets. And then the second part of it is actually the digital assets themselves. And those would be things like cryptocurrencies or, you know, the firms that facilitate the usage of cryptocurrencies, like data exchanges or tools and software. And then you got all the other trends that we're focused on today, like cloud and the movement to off-premises storage. And then you got the whole virtualization. In fact, I saw a great cartoon. So it showed this company, obviously at a meeting, and you got the CEO with his workers around a big board table. They're up on the penthouse suite of an office building. I think some of us remember what an office building looks like, although we haven't been in one for 9 months. And the guy's saying, you know, I don't think digital transformation's coming anytime soon. We're years away. And then outside the window, there's this giant wrecking ball labeled COVID-19. And I think that's what's happened is we were on pace to move towards these digital innovations, regardless of the pandemic. But the pandemic really has accelerated things like work from anywhere or digital exchange or virtual exchange, contactless, you know, payments and contactless value exchange. So lots of disruption is coming, and it's just being accelerated, which, you know, can be painful for the incumbents. You know, you and I were talking before the show about, you know, the impact on businesses that were, you know, focused on kind of in-person or hospitality. You know, we actually drove for Thanksgiving this year, and on the drive back this past weekend, you know, we stayed at a hotel, right? And it was us and not very many other people. So, you know, the numbers, I asked all the hoteliers where I've been over the past few months. We did a big cross-country trip over 6 weeks as well. And 15 to 20%, you know, the highest I heard someone say was kind of 30% of normal. And it's going to be a long time before we get back to normal in the physical world. But in the digital world, those trends are accelerating. Huge opportunities.
When you're trying to put this together in a portfolio, what are you backing away from? And do you ever worry that some of the trends you're seeing get played out? I mean, the technological transformation has been kind of the obvious story here. I mean, it's been talked about so much. I know I'm starting to talk to folks who are saying things have gotten to where, not that the trend is necessarily played out, because the trend's going to continue for a long time, but that it's not buyable. And you talked about having a value bent. How do you put that together?
So that is an amazingly important insight. And it's something we're going to talk about, I think, in a little bit, when we go to hold it or fold it, in the sense that there's absolutely a difference between the trend itself and the companies that are taking advantage of that trend and the valuations of their liquid securities. And I totally agree with you, Chuck, that we are talking about companies or stocks that have surged far and away ahead of any possibility for them to earn their way into their valuations. And there's lots of examples of that. You know, my favorite to pick on is Tesla, which, look, you know, we've been totally wrong on just how crazy that valuation could get. We used to be short. We're no longer short. But I think it's almost time to get short again, because, you know, that company probably will never make a profit, which is a frightening thing. But the stock is, you know, up fivefold this year alone. So lots of examples where valuation has gotten away. And to your point, there's only a dollar, right? If you think about 100 cents on the dollar in a portfolio, unless you leverage. So you have to, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul. So if you think that there's great opportunity in innovation, you got to take money away from someplace. And we have been taking capital away from, you know, fixed income, for example. We think fixed income is return-free risk here. Yields are so low. And in the event that we ever get a meaningful recovery in economic growth, it's likely that interest rates would rise, and that would be bad for bonds. So we have been taking some money out of there. But then what are you going to buy? Are you going to buy some more venture capital? You might buy some equities. But then within equities, is it time to start rotating away from some of the really overvalued segments of technology in the public markets and into some of the undervalued segments like energy and natural resources? And we would say that is the case. So two really important points you make that are critical to long-term investment success, which is, you know, taking profits when things get to extreme valuations and buying things that go on sale, as we've seen in some of the areas of the traditional world or the value world.
Well, now we are going to put it together and see how you feel about some things my audience is particularly interested in.
Play, hold it.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
It's Hold It or Fold It time with Mark Yusko, Chief Investment Officer at Morgan Creek Asset Management, morgancreekcap.com, the website. He's on Twitter, at Mark Yusko. Hold It or Fold It, well, that's where we put our guest to your test. Send your name, your hometown, and the ticker symbols you're interested in to Chuck at moneylifeshow.com. We'll add it to our list and hope it makes it into an interview soon. Starting today with a couple of requests that we got from Rick in York, Pennsylvania. The first, First Trust North American Energy Infrastructure. That's EMLP.
Look, since I spent the first 4 years of my life in York, PA, I'm always fond of questions from your listener there. So happy to answer. Look, we think that the energy space, which has gotten obliterated over the past year with the lockdowns and the decrease in demand for energy, we think has been oversold. And we think there are huge opportunities, particularly in the midstream space and infrastructure. The pipelines are not going to stop carrying oil and natural gas, and we think those are raging buy here.
Let's hit rock bottom. Come on, let's buy.
So it's a buy on First Trust North American Energy Infrastructure, EMLP. Rick's second request is the ARK Innovation ETF. That's ARKK.
Now, the flip side of that, Chuck, to what we were talking about in the main part of the conversation, is there are times when things get really overvalued because they just get overbought and people get overly enthusiastic and extrapolate too far into the future. And look, I think Kathy Wood and the gang at ARK is great. And I think that's a great fund, but it's up well over 100% this year. I think they got too much in Tesla and a couple other, high flyer names. And I just think it's time to take your profits. And I think this has a lot of downside, so I'm a seller here.
It's topped out. I say we sell now.
It's a fold on ARK Innovation, ARKK. Our next two requests are from Richard in Chula Vista, California. The first, well, we were talking about energy, but we weren't talking about oil and the oil services industry. He wants to know about OIH. That's Vanek Vector's Oil Services.
You know, it's funny that life imitating art here, in the sense that, you know, my life is imitating your listeners. Since that I spent a little time out in Chula Vista when the Navy was recruiting me to be a Navy pilot in college, which I regretfully didn't do. Maybe not regretfully, but didn't end up doing. But look, oil services, we think, again, are really oversold. One thing I'm sure of is we're not going to all have electric vehicles anytime soon. Even if we all wanted one, we couldn't get one because there's not enough cobalt and batteries. So we're going to be using oil and gas for a very long time. And the companies that provide the services to these drilling companies, I think, are a great buy here.
Could we please buy now?
That's a buy on OIH, the Vanek Vector's Oil Services ETF. Richard's other request takes us abroad. He wants to know about the Xtrackers Harvest CSI 300 China A-Shares ETF, ASHR.
Yeah, look, I think China's been one of my favorite themes for a while. I think it's the fastest growth country on the planet, along with India. And, you know, the thing about China that's so compelling is pick any company or industry in the world, right? You know, take spirits. If you take a global spirits company like Diageo, you know, you can go get a global spirits or a local spirits company in China, you get twice the growth at half the price. So that's a 4-to-1 upside downside ratio, and we think that's a great play. So the local shares, the A shares, are the ones you want to own, and the A share tracker is a great buy here.
Either gets on board or he gets left behind.
It's a buy on ASHR A share, the X Trackers Harvest CSI 300 China A shares ETF. And last, for Mark in Eagan, Minnesota, staying in that part of the world, but maybe diversify more broadly, it's the WisdomTree Emerging Markets Small Cap Dividend ETF, DGS.
Yeah, so again, partial to guys named Mark, so happy to help here. You know, the interesting thing about emerging markets is they have underperformed U.S. markets for the past decade up until the onset of the virus and the pandemic. And really since then, emerging markets have really outperformed. And we think that they are on course for a decade of outperformance. And the segment within emerging markets that we think is the most attractive is the value segment or the small cap segment. So this ETF brings all that together with small cap and value bias in the emerging markets and has dividends to boot. So a great place to overweight. And if you think about it, if you go back to 1900 and you bought an index fund, you would have had most of your money in the UK and very little in the US. That was a bad trade. Cap weighting is a bad trade. So it makes sure you have the most exposure to the last thing you want at precisely the wrong time. You want to invert that. And so today, an index fund, a global index, is about 55% in the U.S., very little in emerging markets, about 9%. We would flip that upside down and have much more in emerging markets rather than the submerging Western countries.
And if you're looking... If you're looking for that exposure, DGS, WisdomTree Emerging Markets Small Cap Dividend might be something you're looking at. That's a buy.
Bye, bye, bye. Is that all you can think about?
Well, yes. All we can think about is goodbyes. We have to say goodbyes to Mark Yusko. Mark, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me, Chuck. And until we meet again, enjoy the holidays. We'll talk to you soon.
That's Mark Yusko, MorganCreekCap.com for more information.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors Incorporated.
I love chatting with Mark Yusko. You know, one of the interesting things, Mark Yusko and Tom McIntyre do not know each other, but they're both Notre Dame grads and both very active Notre Dame grads. I don't really understand how the two of them could not have somehow crossed paths that way. But financial world's a big place, so I guess that has something to do with it. Always fun talking with Mark. There was no overlap unless you want to go back to the last time that Mark was on the show himself. Because, well, if you do that, he talked about VanEck Oil Vectors Oil Services Fund back then as well. And he was at that point liking it as well because of the same long-term story that he was just telling. The crossover would have been A-Shares, the ASHR. That was something that Tom Lydon recently made ETF of the Week. And I want to respond to several of you have suggested that we get the head of the ARK funds on the show. And we talked about ARKK, the ARK Innovation Fund here. We're working on that. That has been a little tricky because she's a very popular woman right now, given that most of her funds have been just killing it. Now, of course, as Mark pointed out, he believes that ARK Innovation is ahead of itself and that it's got room to fall, not go up. But whatever you want to say about it, the firm itself has been very hot. And yes, we're doing what we can to arrange for that. But we've been arranging guests like crazy. And man, do we have a great lineup. I posted some of it just from the first 10 days of the month on Twitter. But we've added Rob Sharps, head of investments for T. Rowe Price. I mean, come on. When you look at that show that he's going to be on, he's going to be on Tuesday, December the 8th. We've got him. We've got Jason Thomas, the chief economist from AssetMark, and Leo Lydon from Financial Focus Advisory Services will be here talking technical analysis. That's a week from today. And we're going to do a number of shows throughout this month where we cut down one interview and give a little more time to our big interviews or our market calls. That's both because of the gravitas of our guests and the fact that we've got great guests. We want to let them run when we can, but also because, well, it makes my life a little bit easier. So we'll take it sometimes. I mean, in the holidays, you know, if you save a few minutes here and there in terms of organizing things and setting things up, you can then put that time into other things like, you know, getting the show out every day. And we do plan to be here basically every day but the holidays in December if things go as planned. November, another great month on the show. Was it a record month? But it was close. And that's pretty remarkable when you consider that November with the holidays is not a month where anyone would expect to set records or be close. And we were close. So please tell your friends about us. If you want to do us a favor, there's two different things you can do. One, please download us every day. If you wind up discarding us because, you know, you had to miss some shows and you got busy, that's okay. The downloads are important to us, so we hope you will always be downloading us. And if you miss some, catch up and go back and download the ones you missed or whatever, because downloads are important. The other thing is we'd love to have you review us at some point if you want to do it. And we appreciate it when that happens. But again, no pressure. We've got a great show coming tomorrow. It includes Frank Holmes from U.S. Global Investors, Rob Lutz from Cabot Wealth Management, and Noland Langford from Left Brain Investment Research. Meanwhile, thanks to my guests today, D.R. Barton Jr., George Kinder, Ramana King, and Mark Yusko. Thanks to Rob Floyd, my producer, and to Frio, my dog. But mostly, thanks to you for being here, because you make this special and worthwhile for me each and every day. The Money Life quote of the day, and throughout all of December, they're pretty much all going to be somehow holiday or shopping or desire related. The Money Life quote of the day comes from Benjamin Franklin, who said, "If you desire many things will seem few." Yeah, so keep the right perspective on stuff. That's what we're talking about with George Kinder. And while you're keeping that perspective, remember that until we do this again the next time, the best thing you could actually do for your money is to not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe. We'll see you again tomorrow.
Representative policy or strategy of the organization that the host or guest represents. This show is a production of Money Life Radio, Inc., which retains all rights to its content. This broadcast, either in part or in its entirety, may not be retransmitted, reproduced, or rebroadcast without the express consent of Money Life Radio, Inc. This show is an informational service only. The information here is not to be considered a direct and personal recommendation for any individual to make a specific financial decision or transaction, but rather is meant as an informal resource to help investors make informed decisions. Always consult your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney before making any major financial decision. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed for either its accuracy or completeness.
What was his point? I have no idea. Dude, I don't get it. I don't get it either.